You're listening to the Punk News Podcast, episode 213. Welcome to the Punk News Podcast. I'm Adam White, recording for you in a basement in Niagara Falls, Ontario. Joining me on tonight's show in, I'm just going to assume, a basement in Philadelphia, Mr. John Gentile.
Living in the basement with all the monsters, the Draculas, and the mummies, I'll tell you.
You guys have a Draculas problem, right?
Well, yeah, I like Draculas. See, I mean, modern society has made vampires either like sexy things or like silly things, but I like the original idea of Dracula, like this ancient, you know, dictator that sucks people's blood
and lives in your basement
and lives in my basement. Mm-hmm.
And from California, where I think the climate is too warm for Draculas, is Mr. Ricky Frankel.
Yeah, it's been pushing 100 here, so I'm kind of miserable.
Damn, but it's like fall over here.
Yeah, it has not been fun here, but hey, you know. Whatever. It's a desert here.
You see, the fact that I know nothing about your weather currently, but I could just say it's too warm for Draculas, and your answer is just like, yeah, it's incredibly hot here. I'm sort of suspicious of California, because like other places have weather that goes up and down and changes.
Well, you know, we're such a big state that, I mean, you know, Northern California will be raining and sometimes even snowing. Well, down here where I am in Los Angeles, it'll be, you know, 80 in like the middle of winter.
Yeah, it's like meeting a guy that's happy all the time and like always cheerful, and you're sort of suspicious of it. And we're like, what's wrong with this person? It's like, why aren't they kind of grumpy ever?
Kippy-gooly.
Something is up with your whole state.
Well, I mean, look who our governor is.
I don't even know.
Jerry Brown from California Uber Alice.
Was he an action star?
No, he was not, but he's...
Then he is not news in my part of the country.
Zen Fascists will come for you, or whatever it is.
How are you doing, Ricky? You sound kind of rough.
Yeah, Ricky, are you smoking a bong or something over there? Is that what's going on?
No, I don't know what's wrong. I've had, like, because it's been hot, I think I've just been having really bad allergies. And, yeah, but I'm good.
You'll survive?
I'll survive, yeah.
You're just going to tough it out for the sake of the Punk News Podcast.
Yeah, I feel fine. It's just my voice is a little messed up, but whatever. It's cool.
It's gravelly. It gives you like this kind of smoky Tom Waitsian gravitas.
As long as people think I'm above 14, I'm over 14 years old, I'm cool with it. I'll take anything I can get.
Ricky, you need to form a band about drinking whiskey with your friends. You will sell dozens of records. You got to do it right now.
Dozens, huh?
Dozens.
So, John, you have this whole crazy scheme that you want to try to execute on prior to us actually getting into tonight's show. So I guess before we do that, so tonight's show, we're going to talk about a whole bunch of people and a whole bunch of stuff. We're going to talk about a guy who got in trouble for posting lyrics from the band Exodus. We're going to talk about the Red Scare anniversary. John is going to rant about Itch.io. We've got a new project to talk about from Rick Johnson and Dan Podest. Laura Jane Grace put out the trailer for her AOL series. What else do we have coming out? DOA is releasing malt liquor, and the fest schedule was announced. There's a whole bunch of stuff that we're going to get to. But John, before we do any of that, what are we doing?
All right, we're doing some wacky hijinks on the Punk News Podcast tonight, and I'm super excited. Adam E. actually had this idea a little while ago. Is people, you definitely should go to the record store, the used record store, and check out what records they got. Because I was there, and I came across this record at Jupiter Records in Wilmington, Delaware, by this band called The Flames. And I'd never heard of this band. It's not James Brown Flames. It's another band. It's called The Flames. I flipped it over, and this record is from, like, 1980. And listen to these song titles. Living in Bondage, Stabbed to Death, You Always Survive, Menage a Trois, Punish Me, Contaminated, nothing seems to work out. That's some pretty punk rock stuff, right? So I never heard anything about this band. The record was $5, so I bought it. I took it home. I played it. It turns out it's really, really good, like new wave with an edge. It's new wave with an edge. I wonder if it's from like the New York gay disco scene, and I don't mean that as a defamatory sense. I mean that in a factual sense, because all the guys are pretty feminized on the front, and you know all these songs about bondage and stuff. I don't know. So I tried to Google this record, and the band's name is The Flames, and of course there's James Brown's The Flames and Alton Ellis's The Flames. So I couldn't find the band that way. I tried to Google the name of the lead singer, but the lead singer's name is Michael Richards, which of course is Kramer from Seinfeld, but this guy's not Kramer. So I tried to Google the record label, but the record label is Hit Records, which is ungoogleable. So I couldn't find anything about this record. But the kicker is that handwritten in magic marker on the back, it says Michael Richards and his telephone number, and then it says NYC. So this phone number is 34 years old, but we're going to call it right now on the Punk News Podcast and see if somebody answers. You know, it might crap out, and probably nobody will answer. If somebody does, the number's probably long since changed, but we're going to give it a long shot. Are you guys ready to see who is at this mysterious number in New York City?
Can we call 867-5309 after this?
If you want, but we're calling right now. So okay. Here we go, fellas. We're calling. It looks like we're gonna get no answer.
You have reached the office of Elizabeth Belkin. Please leave your name and number, and I will return your call as soon as possible. Thank you.
Hi, I probably have the wrong telephone number, but my name is John Gentile, and I'm trying to reach a guy called Michael J. Richards. If you have any contact information, if you would you please email me at johng@punknews.org? That's johng@ punknews.org. That's johng@punknews.org. Thank you very much. All right, fellas, I think it was a bust, but let's play a track anyway. How about that?
That was the most exciting thing we've ever done.
I was really hoping somebody would answer, but what are you going to do? So let's play this track called You Always Survive. It's off this record. I know nothing about basically beyond the record itself. The band is The Flames. It's out in 1980. The band is actually from Canada. That's where their address is, but this telephone number is New York telephone number, and the record label is in Vancouver. But this is the track by The Flames called You Always Survive.
When you told the crowd to move, and they wouldn't follow through, you just phoned to bring the police. They support you. Well, it got fight, it wasn't good. They said, all right, we're gonna kill you, but you always survive. No matter how it gets. You love it, oh, you need it, and you live it, oh, oh. You're gonna get the thing you waited for all your life. That's right, baby. When you really love it, it's gonna come to you. And you never get hurt, no, you never get caught. And you never have to run away, you just get lost. You don't get excited when things go wrong. No, you don't give a damn, you just keep on moving on. And you always survive, no matter how bad it gets. You always survive, no matter how it gets. Yeah, you always survive, no matter how it gets. Yeah, you always survive, no matter.
We're back on the Punk News Podcast. That was our trying to phone someone experiment, which is clearly going to be one of the key pieces of audio when we look back at this year and see how many exciting things.
We like called some doctor's office at like 10 o'clock at night.
I know. This is rebellion today. The first story that we're going to talk about, speaking of rebellion here, this is an interesting one here. I'll lead this off, and then we'll see what we think about this. So, the American metal band Exodus, which for the record I have never heard, has posted a statement about a fan from Greenville, Kentucky, who has posted the lyrics, or sorry, who was jailed for posting the lyrics to a song from the band Exodus, which was called "Class Dismissed: A Hate Primer." So the man was charged with making terroristic threats for posting the words which describe a school shooting on Facebook. And so here's what the band said. The band said, "The idea that an individual in this great country of ours can be arrested for simply posting lyrics to a song is something I never believed could happen in free society. The song was written with a view through the eyes of a madman who in no way endorses that kind of fucked up behavior. It was the Virginia Tech massacre perpetrated by Sung-hoi Cho that was the subject and inspiration." So the band stopped performing the song after the Sandy Hook shooting, and so that's sort of where this is left. So this kid, I guess, He went and he took the lyrics to this song and threw it up as a Facebook post. I have no idea what kind of context he would have given it. He may have just kind of chucked the lyrics on there. And clearly someone thought this was troubling, so he ended up jailed. John, what do you think of this guy?
Exodus is probably there's the big four thrash metal bands. It's Metallica, Slayer, Anthrax, and Megadeth. Poor Exodus is like the big five. Kirk Hammett was actually in Exodus back in the day. Exodus is, if you're into thrash metal, you know Exodus. If you don't, you don't know Exodus. I find this whole thing extremely scary because if you read the lyrics, these are clearly lyrics. I mean, I felt this for a while. I feel that in America, on both sides, from both the conservative side and from the liberal side, we are getting closer and closer to a society of censorship and control of thought. I think this is probably more the conservative side, but I'm not sure. And so this is clearly lyrics, and I've said this before, is the purpose of art is to create interesting ideas and to perhaps understand things about the world, things about people, from any angle you can perceive to help you understand them. It seems now that we are entering a phase where all lyrics or all art has to express a positive, correct message and cannot be edgy. And basically, I mean, as a society, we're doing this to ourselves, which is despicable. I think this is ridiculous that this guy got arrested. I really hope he beats the rap. Of course, you know, people get arrested for stupid things all the time and they beat the rap. So I hope that's this, and I hope this is an isolated incident, and I hope this isn't a further curtailing of freedom of speech. And I guess either the federal government or the state government clamping down on people expressing ideas, even if they're not ideas that they believe, even though they're expressing ideas that someone might have, not necessarily the artist or the speaker. I hope that this is not a clamp down on that, because if it is, we're in a very, very dangerous position as a country.
Now, go ahead.
No, Rick, you go, and I'll pop in after here.
All right. You know, I got to tell you, I mean, things always go wrong in the South here. Like, seriously, you know, the West Memphis 3, this, it's almost identical. It's another death metal band.
Exodus is not death metal, Ricky.
Well,
thrash, you know, metal.
To like, you know, some country, you know, sheriff, that logo that I'm looking at on the thing is basically, to them, will be, you know, some satanic cult.
True.
Death metal thing. So so that's why I don't think it's more of a left and a right. It's not more of a right thing than a left thing. That's where I disagree with you, John. When it comes to schools and school shootings, I think our country, at least, I mean, yeah, at least here, people react, not overreact, but like they get, everyone gets really upset, and rightly so. But I think especially since, and I don't know if this was a student that did this, but especially since, the zero tolerance policy was enacted in schools a few, like probably 10 years ago now, no one takes a chance anymore with schools. So, and even the smallest thing, like song lyrics now, are taken as now terrorist threats. So, the zero tolerance policy was both a left and a right thing. So I think this is just the South, regardless of who, just the South being the conservative, not conservative, but religiously conservative, you know, part of the country that it is. And I don't think that excludes people from the left or the right. I think that's everyone. But yeah, it's awful that, you know, freedom of speech is dying here.
So I'm going to look at this from two angles. I'm going to take a little bit of the opposite view here, is that there has to be, and this is more of a, I think, a personal responsibility angle I'm going to take on this, not a legal angle, but like there has to be some recognition that if you're going to go onto a public forum and you're going to put something that could be construed this way, that a possibility is that people might construe it this way. I mean, you could take any of the second or the second or third verse out of this song. If you look up the lyrics, let's say that just all of a sudden those show up on your feed from someone who you, let's say, you know, who you go to school with or something like that. And basically it's a bunch of, it looks like a bunch of poetry about shooting up a school. So let's say you don't know Exodus, and you know, you're not familiar with that kind of music or anything like that. I don't think it's entirely unreasonable for a person on the receiving end of that to see that and go like, whoa, what the fuck is this guy posting? So I think that reaction is somewhat, you know, I can't fault someone necessarily for having that reaction, because that's some scary shit that the song is saying. And I think out of context, just as, you know, some stuff posted on Facebook, not seen as a song, not seen as, you know, they didn't say that this guy like shared the YouTube clip or something like that. They said he posted some lyrics. So I can see why that could be seen as, if not a threat, of maybe, you know, something to give one pause when seeing it. Now, the extension of this is, if something looks like poetry or song lyrics, we have this Google thing where you, as even if you're law enforcement, could probably look that up and go, oh, it's a song. And you'd be able to really quickly kind of identify that. And it's not like someone screwed up poetry or whatever. Not that I'm saying that someone should be jailed for their own screwed up poetry. But I don't know. To me, there's a bit of a responsibility thing here, where if you have a bunch of content that could really easily be misconstrued as threatening, and then you go and you throw it onto a public forum, is there a little bit of, you know, yelling fire in a crowded theater that applies to something like this? Not that people should be, you know, legally prevented from saying these things, but like, did this guy think that, hey, maybe there'd be some repercussion if like a bunch of friends and family and classmates saw a bunch of stuff from my name about shooting up a school all of a sudden?
Maybe not. I mean, maybe this kid's just some 14-year-old kid that just thought the lyrics were cool to put them up there. That's what I think this was. But the answer is, the question is this just yelling fire in a theater? And my answer is no, And here's my response to that is because almost anything can be misconstrued as a threat. You know, he's not saying I'm going to go shoot up my school. You know, he's putting something that's obviously poetry or lyrics or whatever. Anything can be construed as a threat. So we say, well, if you put something that could be construed as a threat online, then you can get arrested for that. Then that means basically we've enacted full force of censorship. Would the police be wrong to go and talk to this guy if people thought there was a genuine threat? Maybe not. I mean, maybe they could go talk to him, but there's no need to arrest this kid. Arresting this kid is tantamount to pure censorship. And if I was the kid's parents, I'd sue.
Yeah, I think that's where the kind of the lines cross. Like, I'm saying that I wouldn't necessarily be all that against, you know, someone looking into it, someone talking to the kid and figuring out that, like, hey, like, are you okay? Is any of this legit or whatever? But that conversation you imagine would happen before someone ends up in jail. So I guess that's what I'm not quite clear about is how it gets from like A to B there.
Well, I mean, look at what he's charged with. I mean, this is something that, someone like, a homegrown terrorist would be charged with. This guy is just posting lyrics of a song.
What I'd really be curious about is that John, the thing that he was charged with, terroristic.
Oh, he's 31. He's not some kid, but I still stand by my point.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, okay. So this terroristic threat thing that he's been charged with. I'm just kind of looking this up here. It is.
Well, it doesn't say he was actually charged. It says he was arrested.
Being
arrested for something, just so the Pungus listeners know, the police will arrest you for what they believe you might be liable of. Once you get arrested, then the DA decides whether or not to charge you or not. I bet you here the DA did not charge this kid. Grown man.
Well, the article says this: the man has been charged with making terroristic threats.
Oh, he does?
Yeah.
It's bullshit.
They'll probably be dropped. If they come to their senses, but
I know it's Kentucky, man.
It's the South.
I would definitely sue the cops for this one. I'll tell you, I would for violation of First Amendment speech. I'll tell you that.
So I'm not going to bore like everyone by sitting here and reading the Kentucky definition of what terroristic threat means, because that's what I'm doing right now. But I'd be really curious about like what the actual letter of that law is and how that's put together. I mean, the fact that it is called a terroristic threat, that it sounds a lot like one of these laws that we've kind of enacted post 9/11 to, you know, overreact to things that we had laws about prior to 9/11, right?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
But I don't actually know that, so I'm not going to.
I don't think you would have seen this before 2001.
Well, maybe not. They might have not called it terroristic threats, but this is pretty black letter law that's existed for a long time. A person is guilty of terroristic threats in the third degree or any degree when he threatens to commit any crime likely to result in death or serious physical injury to another person. Or he does it to like evacuate a building, something like that. And this was effective June 21st, 2001, which is before September 11. How you like that? Mm-hmm. So, but regardless, this clearly is not that. The cops knew it wasn't that, so this is ridiculous. And the Kentucky Penal Code, the Kentucky Criminal Code is KRS, as in KRS-1.
Well, we've taken that out of this story, so
hey, at least
I don't know where we go with this one. It's
well, you know, at least the band's band's taking a stand with him, so maybe that'll help the case.
Yeah, you know, down in Kentucky, you know, you get these judges that say, you know, what does this little freak think how he's doing? You know, and try to throw the book at him just because he's some, you know, grass chewing judge. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So I hope this guy gets out of it.
Well, I don't know. Is there anything else about this one, or do we move on?
Quickly, related, this goes both ways to our previous discussion. I think most punk rockers out there would say that you should be able to post these kinds of lyrics online. But remember, it goes the other way, too. A lot of punk rock guys like Joe Queer or whatever, which I don't agree with what Joe Queer said, but they say offensive things. And these punk rockers are like, you know, he should be allowed to say that, or, you know, I'll never listen to him again, or like what Henry Rollins said. I'll never listen to him again because I don't agree with what he says. you can't only give free speech to things you agree with. Free speech works in all at all angles, even though you don't agree with. That's the purpose of free speech. So just because a punk rocker says something you don't agree with doesn't mean they shouldn't be allowed to say it. It doesn't even mean you should dismiss them. It just means you don't agree with them on that point.
All right. Real quick, what I completely missed the Joe Queer thing. What happened there? I don't know what happened.
But you want the full recap of this?
I don't need the full recap, but like, just is it?
Ricky, this was a 40-minute discussion last week.
I must admit, I don't know what happened then. I wasn't on.
Listen to last week's podcast, and you can catch up.
I'll catch up then.
Moving on, the Red Scare. Right. The Red Scare, Red Scare Records, or Red Scare Industries, however you want to refer to them, they've released it. They've released their 10-year anniversary compilation. It's called the Red Scare 10 Years of Your Dumb Bullshit Compilation, and it's out today digitally. I think the physical's out in a little while. It's got a bunch of, I think, all exclusive tracks, new tracks. It's got stuff from Teenage Bottle Rocket. It's got stuff from the very last recording from Cobra Skulls. It's got copyrights, Mass Intruder, the first recording from The Falcon in about 6 years. Brendan Kelly's band. It's got a Brendan Kelly solo track. I know Ricky reviewed this. Ricky, what did you think of this compilation?
I really liked it. I mean, obviously because I gave it an 8. I loved the new Direct Hit song. I'm a huge fan of theirs. The Reaganomics song was lyrically really cool. I really enjoyed it. It was kind of like, It's called Bite Your Tongue on there, just about like how people just need to stop shoving down their views down other people's throats. And I was actually, I never listened to them before, but I was really surprised with the new Lillington song. It was kind of this like sci-fi pop punk thing that I really liked.
Which is to a T, the Lillingtons.
Okay, well, there you go. I did not, again, like, I was not really familiar with their stuff, but I love the Brendan Kelly stuff, Direct Hit, the Reaganomics. What else did I write about? I didn't write about it, but the Mass Intruder song was pretty good. It's a good comp. People, it's averaging, I think the user rating now is 4.6 out of 5, and I gave it a 4, so people are really liking it.
This is a compilation that we don't see. Cut from a mold that we don't see a lot of anymore. Mainly because the internet sort of like killed the whole compilation game. We don't see a lot of those anymore in general. But we don't see a lot of these collections of exclusive track B-side things to the degree that we did in say like the late 90s. So it's nice to see. It's nice to see them, you know, be able to assemble this. Given, I think, Toby Jegg's sort of like love of, you know, I want to say like late 90s pop punk / CD culture. I'm sure that this is like just it makes him just tickled to have, you know, one of these style compilation CDs full of B-sides on it, because it's the kind of thing that Epitaph or Fat or one of those labels that really inspired a lot of the stuff that Red Scare does these days would have put out back in the heyday of that. So good on them. If you are a fan of any of this stuff or Red Scare's output, of course you should be all over this. Looking back at Red Scare, it's pretty impressive to see the degree to which their output has, you know, sort of become the farm team for Fat and Epitaph, and a lot of the bands that they've had have gone on to, you know, to become the Fat and Epitaph bands of today, and that Red Scare was championing this back when, not so much Fat, but back when Epitaph wasn't really signing a lot of, I guess, like, org-approved punk bands and was doing just a lot of weird shit.
Yeah, I made
their eye on the ball, I guess.
I made that point in the the beginning of the review. Menzingers, I'm just looking at my review again. The Menzingers did their second full length on Epitaph. Mass Intruder, second full length on Fat. Teenage Bottle Rocket just left Fat after, two albums, I think, and now are on Rise, which, I mean, clearly, I think, clearly Toby has an eye for these bands.
Yeah, I mean, Toby, now, I don't know, like, what, if everyone knows, like, the whole, like, Toby Jegg history, but Toby used to work for Fat, and he was working for Fat back when, I'm gonna say like the early 2000s at least. Toby was one of our point people at FAT that we'd always deal with there. So that he kind of like left and went out on his own and kind of created something that matters to a lot of people is really cool. So there you go, Toby. You're an asshole sometimes, but your label has survived 10 years. So good for you. That's why I'm doing this with this. I don't know. Anything, John, this ain't up your alley.
Did you say this is not up my alley, or you say is this up my alley?
This is not up your alley.
Well, let me put it this way. I mean, a lot of people love these bands, and that's fine. These bands are inoffensive. You know, they play music in the classic pop sense, you know, verse, chorus, verse, that kind of thing. And if people were not, that's fine. You know, I mean, if I was at a concert and one of these bands was playing, I would listen. You know, I'm not a huge fan, but I'm not against it either. I think it's just fine. What I guess kind of bumps me out is punk. You can view punk rock from two angles. Well, many angles, but two of the angles you can say punk rock is a place where everyone's included. Doesn't matter who you are, you can be part of the club. And that part of punk rock is great, and I stand by it. I say if you want to be part of punk rock, if you want to come in the door and not be a dick, then you can join the club. That's the only rule to punk rock is you can't be a dick, you know. The other angle of punk rock, though, is that punk rock is about daring, breaking boundaries, making whacked out, weird, dangerous music. And that's what I love about punk rock the best. That's my favorite part of punk rock. And so this leads. So I would say that the Red Scare stuff exemplifies the first half. The music is good music, but it's not necessarily daring. It's not super adventurous. You know, it's 2.5 minutes. It's Ramones core or pop punk. It wouldn't shock if you heard it in the 90s. So I get kind of bummed out when something that is daring, something that is exciting, something that is brand new that you've never heard before, something that's crazy, new, dangerous comes out, and people hate it because it's different. One of my very favorite record labels is Alternative Tentacles. I love Alternative Tentacles because they put out so many weird, different recordings. You know, they're putting out World Inferno this year, but they're also putting out this band called Itch.io. Itch.io is a 32-piece punk drum electronic marching band. The new album's going to be out on Alternative Tentacles on September 16, which will be the time you hear this. And this is some weird, neat stuff. I mean, it's kind of like New Orleans techno-ish. The songs are like 7 minutes long each, and it's just 32 people hitting all these drums, these weird... I've never heard anything like it. I guess what I've heard like it is kind of like New Orleans marching bands, but it's more far out than that. It's spacier than that. So it's cool, it's interesting, and it's brand new. It's something like I haven't really heard before, and it's worth checking into. I was very disappointed, and I understand that the commenters actually don't represent our readership, and now more than ever, the commenters really don't represent the readership. If you contrast the Facebook comments to the punknews.org comments, you see a wildly different perspective. So I do get kind of bummed out on the punknews.org commenters. Not all of them, the very small minority, that basically say, well, for example, what's punk about this? All I see is a party percussion band and some sombreros. And then somebody says, and a shitty one at that. But, I mean, that's exactly what's punk rock about this, is that it breaks all the rules. It's whacked out. It's far out there. It's not just a couple of guys, three guys or four guys, doing verse, chorus, verse about, you know, their girlfriend or pizza or drinking. This is something wild, far, daring, and experimental. And the fact is, if Jello Biafra's into something, doesn't guarantee that it's good, but it's worth taking a look. Because Jello Biafra, he's Jello Biafra, he's got great taste. And so I checked this out, I dug this, I think this is neat. And I think, I don't want to harp on people too much, but the point is this is, punk rock is not about adhering to a template. Punk rock is not about conformity. Punk rock is not about that music should only be 2.5 minutes. It's not that it can't be that either, but punk rock is about making daring, challenging, aggressive art. And that's exactly what this band is, and that's why this band gets my thumb up.
You know, I'm totally not into this by any means, but I agree with you and what you're saying. And, I mean, even you want to take it out of the usual John Gentile Jello Biafra axis here and look at it from – I always think about things like this from the perspective of the radio show that Joe Strummer had in his latter years, I guess, where he was playing just like weird stuff and world music and things like that. And there was a lot of, I think, people that were that sort of expected him to do punk rock in this, I don't know, in this, I guess, early Clash mode when he came back to making music again. And then what he was doing with the Mescaleros was just still doing weird stuff, doing stuff kind of to his own beat. And that's what was good. That was made it kind of punk rock, was just that he was out there, you know, experimenting and doing his own thing. And that was the kind of stuff that he was playing on his radio show. And that was the stuff that he was championing later in his life. And it feels like it's that same sort of thing that we see from a lot of guys that were of that generation, is that, you know, they kind of go one of two routes, is they either, you know, do the nostalgia tour thing, or they just keep being weird. And I feel like the scene sometimes goes the nostalgia tour direction on things, but, you know, it's nice that at least there's someone out there keeping it weird. That was a complete wandering point that I was trying to make, but, you know.
I listened to it. I got to, I won't, like, buy the album and sit down and listen to it. It just didn't hit me the right way. So I don't fault anyone for trying something new, like a lot of the commenters do, as you two have said. I don't see myself listening to this. But hey, I give them credit for trying something new.
Fair enough. I think this band probably really comes to life when you see them live. You know, some bands are like amazing live, just the spectacle of it all, you know?
Yeah, and that, I mean, for something super percussion based like this, I'd have to imagine that that's the case.
Yeah. Adam, you want to keep us rolling along?
Oh, I suppose so. We had some new music if you're of the ska-minded persuasion here. So Dan Potast of MU330 and Rick Johnson of Mustard Plug have formed a new band called Sharkanoid. So on top of the formation of the new band, they're going to release a new record. And this thing, sucker, is going to be called Have a Great Summer. It's coming out on October 7th. It features guest appearances by Bomb the Music Industry's Jeff Rosenstock and Laura Stevenson. And you can preview a couple songs from it over on Punk News. They've got these things up on Bandcamp right now. The label that's putting this out is Community Records. Yeah. So this thing has 12 songs on it. You can check out 4 of them over at Bandcamp right now. This is something you should go look into. John, a few of these people intersect with your world a little bit, right?
Yeah. Well, actually, Dan Potast is a cool guy. I don't know him that well, but he's cool. I enjoy this. Dan Potast was part of MU330. I was not a huge I'm not anti-MU330, just not really my thing. But what was cool about MU330 is they was high-energy driving ska, punk, or sometimes just ska. After that, he's formed a couple bands. One band is a old-school ska band, but he's also been doing a lot of acoustic stuff lately. I'm not really into the whole acoustic ska or even acoustic music thing. This new band is a little bit more jacked up, a little bit more exciting, and I'm digging this, along with the new Mike Park record. It's sort of a ska revival, if you will. So I'm excited for this record. I think it's going to be cool. And if you're into this stuff, stay tuned to the Punk News podcast and the Punk News website, because we're likely going to be doing an interview on the podcast with both Rick and Dan, and we might be doing a couple other cool things if you're into this kind of music. So stay tuned.
There's a lot of really nice kind of respectable ska stuff coming out right now that's not super goofy.
Yeah.
Interrupters.
Well, I was just thinking that. Okay, so
Interrupters aren't that bad. I mean, they're really not that bad.
No, but they embody a lot of the stereotypes, I guess.
This is my family.
Looking at like the stuff that Mike's doing with the new Bruce Lee Band record, and you know the stuff that Jeff Rosenstock's been doing. Of course, I mean, there's a lot of, you know, ska punk related stuff coming out that I think that you can listen to right now without being embarrassed.
Yeah.
Not that you should feel embarrassed about listening to anything, except for if the only thing you listen to is the Melvins, then, you know, what the hell. But the...
I have no shame.
But yeah, I don't know. It seems like there's a lot of stuff coming out right now that I think old people like me can actually... get back into if we've wavered from the ska world for a while. So this sounds nice.
Side note, hasn't 2014 been a great year for music so far? Way better than 2013, if you ask me.
Oh, absolutely. Yes, 100%.
Justify this.
I'm like, what? Why is Adam declaring justify? Like, I thought you were like quoting Justin Timberlake or something, and I was like, what?
But, no, he didn't coin that word.
Thanks, but I didn't realize it was an imperative to justify that statement. go ahead, Ricky.
Just for me, I mean, I've been, of all the bands I've been, a lot of the bands I've been following have put out a bunch of stuff that's really good. Off, Morning Glory. What else? I have a list somewhere, but no. Let's see here. Off. Sorry, hang on a second. Lawrence Arms, Dwarves, Against Me, Andrew Jackson Jihad, Fucked Up. Let's see who else. Did I say Lawrence Arms already? Menzingers. And then, you know, I found two bands. I discovered two new bands this year that are absolutely fantastic, and that's Pup with their new album, and that's awesome. And then Pairs. They're also fantastic.
Yeah, so, yeah, Canada 20... says Pup came out last year. This is going to be a big point of contention when we're doing the list this year, because everyone loves that Pup record. It's a great record. I love that Pup record. It was on my list last year, and really? I'm sure it's going to be like, we're going to get down to this situation with the punk news end of year lists where we're tallying everything up, and I'm going to have stubbornly not put Pup on my list because it came out last year, and everyone else will have it on their list, and it'll be like one mathematical, you know, ranking away from being number one or something like that, and my asshole opinion on this is going to cost them that. I know that's going to happen. I can predict it.
Well, if it helps the 2014 side, I did review that album in 2014.
It's like ceding national sovereignty to the Americans, if I'm going to admit that that's a 2014
record. Close the border!
The weird thing about that is it was streaming in Canada for like 6 months or whatever, and then the U.S. they're like, Pup's released a track from the new album, go here to hear it. And it's like, you can hear the whole album in Canada.
It's like, yeah, like everyone's owned this record for a long time. I don't know what's going on.
It was like no one... I'm very pro-America. I love America. But we had like these blinders on. Everyone's like, oh man, I can't wait to hear the new Pup record. I'm like, you can hear it right now on the internet. It's just being hosted in Canada. People are like, nah, man, can't go to a website hosted in Canada, you know? It was like...
I did not know that. I knew they were around. I just didn't know.
Because you got your blinders on, Ricky. You know, America is not the world, Ricky.
Oh.
No, you're right. Los Angeles is. Anyway, it's... I also, weren't they under a different... They were Topanga before, right?
Yeah, but they were always Pup with this record. Topanga was before was their prior stuff that they had done, which I don't know if they had actually ever done a full length as Topanga. But man, when they were Topanga, they were playing like local shows in my neck of the woods. Like it feels like forever ago, but it was probably like last year really. I actually agree with you. This year I'm looking at my kind of 2004 list at the moment, and it was my 2004, my 2014 list right now. And it's feeling a lot more solid than my 2013 batch. I'm looking at the things that were like rounding out the bottom of my, you know, ooh, what are my favorite records of 2013? This one feels like I've got a really good slate of stuff in there already. And if I was forced to turn around and write the list today, I would have enough material to you know, assemble something I'd be fairly proud of. So, hey, we're not even at the end of the year, so that's pretty cool.
Yeah, World Inferno announced their album that should be coming out this year. Then there's always the rumored Leftover Crack album that they're supposed to be happening, but I don't know if it is.
That's not coming out this year.
Yeah, probably not.
Yeah, there's been a lot of really nice stuff that came out on Dirt Nap this year. The Sonic Avenues record that was out on Dirt Nap is like one of my favorite things. The Steve Adamic Band one was out on Dirt Nap, so they've been just killing it. What else came out? You guys mentioned a lot of them. The Black Lips had a record that came out. You know, if you're into indie pop and stuff like that, New Pornographer's record that just came out is really good. You know, if you're me, Bri Webb from the Constantines had a record came out that was good. yeah, so anyways, this year is all right. That Copyrights record, that one's pretty nice.
Yeah,
so anyways, yeah. So there you go. Not too bad a year. Do we want to play a song? You got this, got something, or
somebody's got something. Adam, no, you have something, or Ricky, somebody got something.
I don't have anything.
Oh, okay. Okay, I'll do one. John, this feels like a little bit of a you song slash story slash weird old thing that I found.
Ooh.
So yeah, all right. So there was a band out of Hamilton, Ontario, which is just 30-40 minutes up the road from here, that formed about 40 years ago or so, called Simply Saucer. Now, they were a proto-punk band. They were really of that, I heard someone actually call it like Rust Belt punk, group of kind of soul and funk influenced hard rock bands that were out at the time. So stuff like, you know, the Stooges, MC5, of you know, Alice Cooper to some degree. Mm. So they were of that ilk, of that class, except that no one outside of like Canadian music historians really ever gave a shit about them. So they played like completely locally, but that was their family. That was their sound at the time. So they just recently, and this is why they came onto my radar, they got together with Schizophrenic Records out of Hamilton. Now, Schizophrenic Records put out the last record from TV Freaks. They put out some stuff from a band called Born Wrong. It's a really good hardcore band. But anyways, so they got together with Schizophrenic to release some new stuff. They are one of these bands that, you know, broke up in around the late 70s and then slowly kind of reassembled themselves over the decades after that. And they play a little bit more regularly now. So what they did is that they took a bunch of songs that were from that original era of theirs, and that only really existed either as live tracks or demos or, you know, not proper studio releases. And in August of 2011, they went into the studio. They went to Ghetto Recorders in Detroit with Jeff Mayer of Detroit Cobras producing, and put this stuff down as proper studio tracks. And they, the stuff that they released, it's a 5-song EP called Baby Nova that has been released now on Schizophrenic. Now, I'm going to play actually one of the older versions of one of these songs. If you want to hear one of the new ones, you want to hit up Exclaim, the Canadian music publication, search for Simply Saucer, and you want to check out the new version of the song Low Profile. And it's really good, and it's cool, and it's soulful, and it's garagey, and it's really neat. I'm going to play you the original demo version of Low Profile. Now, this demo was actually produced by let me see here. It was a super famous guy, and I'm completely losing who it was. Typing on the thing is always good.
I love Adam White's story time.
Yeah. Here's some stuff about Canada. All right, so... Oh, I'm blanking on it. Whatever. You don't need to look it up. He's super famous, whoever the hell he is. Anyways, this was one of the low-profile demos. Or so this is the demo of the song, Low Profile. It was finally released on a LP that they put out called Cyborgs Revisited that's kind of come out a few times. But this, I think, was recorded back in 1974, at least the demo that we're going to listen to.
Mm.
And it's got a really cool kind of like old Detroit rock and roll groove to it. So here you go. This is Simply Saucer from Hamilton, Ontario, with the demo Low Profile, who is produced by a super famous Canadian record producer whose name I'm totally blanking on.
Is it Daniel Lanois or Bob Lanois?
It is Daniel Lanois.
Oh, wow. You. He produced Bob Dylan, Neil Young, Peter Gabriel, Brian Eno. Wow.
I'm almost positive it is. Hold on.
It is. I'm sure it is. Wow. Wow.
We're going to confirm this. Yes.
I confirmed it.
Sorry, it was Daniel and Bob Lanois produced it. In 1974. There you go. Ha. Ha. Anyways, this is the song. It's called Low Profile. Thank you.
And we're back. That was a bumping track. Adam, I love it when Adam White brings the Canadian jams. I love it when Adam White brings the old school jams. Tonight was an old school podcast, man. We got rare tracks from Canadian bands, rare tracks from a Canadian band that was in NYC. Old school track night tonight on the Punk News Podcast. But let's talk about something new, something fresh, changes.
Something like Bring Me the Horizon.
Something like something like Falling in Reverse.
Actually, what are we actually talking about?
we're actually talking about something that is completely opposite of that 100%. We're talking about the trailer has been released for Laura Jane Grace's upcoming America Online TV series, True Trans. It's going to be a 10-part series that will follow the Against Me frontwoman as she travels around the country meeting transgender men and women, discussing the idea of gender, as well as discussing those transgender people's own personal stories of coming out and the hardships that came with that. Laura Jane Grace said, "The opportunity I had while shooting this show was nothing short of tremendous. Getting the chance to listen to other people tell their stories of how life shaped their identities and views on gender couldn't help but further inform my own understanding of just how complicated and how simple all of it really is." So Laura Jane Grace playing with dualities in her little quote. I know Ricky's a big Against Me fan. Ricky, are you excited for this? Are you going to watch this? Are you excited for this?
Go ahead. Yeah. No, go ahead. You finish.
Oh, I was just doing a big drum roll. Will this inform your understanding of Against Me?
Well, here's the thing. There's a small chance, but there's a chance that I might actually be seen in this. And let me explain. They were filming this when I saw them, when they did both nights at the Roxy here in Los Angeles in May. I was there an hour and a half early, in line, first in line, and a camera was following Laura and the band. And then there was also, the next day after the first show, they were doing a signing in Echo Park at some record store, and they were filming that too. There's just a camera following Laura all the time, and they were filming people getting their stuff signed. So I was in that record store, and I was getting my record signed by the band. And I saw them interviewing other trans gender fans and all that stuff. So I kind of got a feel for what was going on. They were filming on stage and everything. So I kind of have an idea of what might go down. It'd probably be a lot of live shows, interviews with Laura talking to other transgender people. But yeah, I will watch this. And I'm looking forward to the other things she's going to be putting out. You know, like she was talking about like a live record a while ago and the book. The biography. So I'll be checking all three out for sure.
Ricky, is there going to be a shot of like security guards like dragging you out of the record store and you're like, "I love you, Laura! I love you!"
No, I should have thrown a fit if I had realized what was going on now. But
you should just, as a rule, whenever someone has you on camera, just throw a fit.
What they did was their very first EP. I got that signed by her, and she wanted to know my name, so I told it to her. But I
snapped your fingers and were like, "Tricky Ricky Frankel."
Honestly, I was so giddy as like a schoolgirl that I was even in the band's presence that I forgot to mention anything else about myself. So
Ricky, man, when you want camera, you should be like, "Listen to Punk News. Go to punknews.org. PU." Well, you know.
Well, here's the thing. They were only interviewing transgender fans instead of everyone, which that's fine. I get it.
You could have lied, Ricky. You could have taken one for the team.
No, I do not. I would have had to shave my beard to look more feminine, which I am not. So whatever, it's fine. But no, this is going to be cool. This will be cool. I'm interested. Anyone else?
I was trying to come up with some way to take what you just said and use it to mock you. And I don't know why I was doing that, because that's a mean thing to do.
That's productive.
So all right. So Laura Jane Grace's True Trans, possibly featuring Tricky Ricky Frankel, will be on AOL soon for you to check out. So our next story here, Kate Nash has formed a feminist collective called Girl Gang. So Nash states that, she says, "I feel it is our responsibility together to start making noise and taking action. We need to have a more fight it attitude, get angry, make some waves, be loud. There's absolutely been progression, but we don't want to take two steps forward and one step back. I personally think our generation has sat back a bit because we could, which is awesome, but let's not let that slip." So you can read the full mission statement. We got that thing linked on Punk News, so you can check it out. Nash states that anyone is welcome to host a Girl Gang meeting. The first Girl Gang social will take place on September 14th which is in a few days, at The Smell in L.A., which, I don't know, is that a club, Ricky?
Yeah, it's a pretty popular club down there. I mean, that's where, like, they have, like, a lot of the Burger Records crew and stuff.
All right, so yeah. So yeah, there'll be mini sets at that gathering by the Aqua Dolls, Colleen Green, La Sera, Peach Kelly Pop, Allie Kohler, and others. So anyways, you can find all that info and everything linked on Punk News. So there you go. Kate Nash has formed the Gang Girl Collective.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting that she said that she thinks this generation has sat back a bit, and she might be right. I'm not a feminist scholar, but I think this is cool. I think there should be more girls. And you know, I've been watching a lot of old punk rock videos, and man, there were way more girls in punk rock bands in like the late 70s, even in the mid 70s, than there were in like 2005, 2006. I do think that's changing. More gigs that I go to, I see more girls in bands. Maybe that's just because I've been going to different kinds of shows or whatever. But I think this is cool. I support this, and I think it's kind of, I think it's a good idea how it doesn't have like one exact mission statement or have, you know, you have to do this to be in. Basically, it's the idea is if you're a feminist and you support women and you want to support women in the arts, you can be part of the gang. And I'm down. I think it's cool.
Yeah, I do too. And when you talked about more women being at shows, I've definitely noticed that too, for sure. Just for just examples, like you know, of course the Dwarf shows, but even like at the heart, like the more rowdier places, like the Leftover Crack shows, I was surprised at how many women were totally into it, and it was almost half and half the last time I saw them. But oh, this is all good. It's cool she's doing this.
To the converse, I saw DOA about 8 months ago. It was like 99% dudes. I don't know why, but DOA is releasing a malt liquor. And they're going on a Canadian tour, which might be their final tour. They said they were going on their final tour like a year ago, and this is kind of like an extension of that. So will this be the final DOA tour dates, or is DOA not retiring? Nobody knows. Anyways, they're putting out a liquor or a malt liquor. I don't know the difference between a beer and a malt liquor, to tell you the truth. Do anybody know the difference between a beer and a malt liquor?
Is this like doesn't it usually come like a 40 ounce?
Is it the size? I mean, is a malt liquor, is that a beer or is a liquor? I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's technically beer.
Anyway, it's called Hardcore 8.1, and it's 8.1% alcohol content. Obviously referencing DOA's very famous album, Hardcore 81. It's going to be available on tour. The tour is all Canada. It starts October 1st and runs through November 1st. I saw DOA, like I said, about 8 months ago. They still, I don't know if this is the last tour or not, but I saw them 8 months ago. They kicked ass. They didn't do anything surprising. They were just DOA, you know, being DOA, but they kicked ass.
Joe Shithead is looking old in the picture that we've got.
When I saw him, he looked pretty young, dude.
I think it might just be the picture that we ran with this article, but like usually he looks like he's, you know, he's got a lot of fight in him, but
yeah.
Maybe this isn't a great photo, but dude looks old in this one.
You're looking at the one of them sitting down?
Yeah, he looks old to me.
Well, yeah,
I don't know. He looks tired.
Was no one thrown off a little bit just by how greasy it is to have your own malt liquor?
So I guess, okay, let's come back to the legal definition of malt liquor. Now, malt liquor, also the first thing I ever drank to get drunk when I was a teenager. That was like my entryway into drinking, and it was totally gross at the time, and I'm glad that I don't drink it anymore. I think I've only ever drank it once.
I mean, the purpose of malt liquor is to get drunk, right?
Like, well, that's what we thought. Yeah. But okay. I mean, malt liquor doesn't really have like a huge set definition. It's basically, to be really blunt about it, it's beer with higher than 5 alcohol content that the brewer has decided to call malt liquor. I mean, in practice, it tends to be, well, you've seen it, like, yeah, like super bulk produced, which means it's probably not good beer, which means they throw a lot of like adjuncts in there, like corn and rice and shit like that, to actually make it
boozier.
Well, not boozier, but if you're going to make beer in that quantity and you're going to use like the finest hops, it's going to be fairly, or the finest hops, the finest barleys, it's going to be fairly expensive. So you cut that by, instead of using barley, you find some other grain that you can make alcohol out of, and you throw that shit in there, because people aren't drinking malt liquor to like know, ooh, this is, you know, they're not quaffing their malt liquor, right? They're So you just throw whatever crap in there you can to make this giant fermented piss-colored piss for people to drink. So I don't know. I have a very poor opinion of malt liquor, and this is maybe me being a beer snob. So anyways, yeah.
Adam, go to the show and try it.
Oh, it's been like... It's been a long, long time since I've ever touched malt liquor. I don't know if I want to do that.
What's up, Joey Shithead? I'm here to get smashed. I will say, I mean, it does make sense that DOA is releasing their own beer. I don't know about malt liquor, but DOA have long been beer aficionados. They're always talking about what kind of beer they like because they're Canadian. So, I mean, the release makes sense. I don't think this is supposed to be like some big marketing thing. I think this is kind of like a wacky, fun gimmick, you know?
Yeah, it probably is.
Yeah.
Is there going to be a trendy thing? Can we have, like artisanal malt liquors?
I would know. Can we have malt liquors for, like, all bands?
Every band gets their... I love it when bands make food products. It's super rare, but every once in a while, you'll be at a show and you'll see a merch table and the band has done something weird. There's this like, two-piece, sort of, like, their genres all over the place, but, I mean, you could... really poorly call them an alt country band called the Sun Parlor Players that's up here in Ontario that I think I've played a song or two from theirs on the podcast before. And they sell preserves at their shows. Like, like you go there and they'll be like, you know, they'll have t-shirts and records and then like a bunch of canned fruits and stuff like that in mason jars that they've gone and made. Because that's just a weird thing. I remember being at like, oh God, I mean like punk shows when I was in college were like, you know, I'm trying to think what your word is for it because it's different for us.
A dorm?
No.
A transit station?
What do you call your veteran hall things? Are they veterans halls?
Veteran halls.
Veteran halls. Okay, yeah, that's your word for it. We call them, we have, like, the Royal Canadian Legion, so they're usually Legion halls up here. But anyways, we were in, like, a Legion hall, and, like, this band, like, they made a bunch of cookies, and... that was what they had at their show, was there was just cookies that were there. So I'm all for food as merch.
Well, speaking of bands...
Speaking of food as merch...
Fest 13 has released its full schedule. We're wrapping up the podcast. People love the food down in Gainesville. Fest runs October 31st to November 2nd. And I don't know if there's a whole lot of conflicts this year. Have you guys checked out the schedule? I know Adam's not going. I'm not going. I think Ricky might be going. Ricky, are you going to Fest this year?
I wish.
Oh, yeah. Well, what shows would you guys hit up? And there's also a lot of mystery cover sets.
Well, those look good. I'd want to check out Antarctica Vespucci just because that probably is going to be a really good time.
On the Friday, they got Nightbirds and Chicks Diggit playing at the same time. That is a crime.
I was talking. I saw a direct hit on. I think it was either Thursday or Friday. No, it was Friday, and they were talking about how them and Pup are in this at the same times in different locations too.
I mean, that always happens. We'll mm-hmm. probably end up doing an article or something about it because we do every year. But there's, you will inevitably get some completely heartbreaking schedule conflicts at this. But there's a lot of nice batches of bands that looks like that are playing a few of these. Like there's a few as I was going through the schedule where, but I could sit around in one of these venues and not move the whole night, like. Not like a statue. I mean, like not have to like venue hop, and be perfectly cool. Like the Bodidley Plaza on the Friday. So mixtapes, copyrights, Chicks Diggit, Lemuria, the Menzingers. Like that's cool. I can just hang out there the whole time. There was one that just made me as like a '90s ska kid. Yeah. Okay. Same venue Saturday. Broadway Calls, Banner Pilot, Masked Intruder, Dear Landlord, The Flatliners, The Slackers, Less Than Jake. There's so much ska.
Oh,
and then
wow.
Descendants. Right? So
that's yeah, might as well just stay there.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. And so that would be there would be some super easy choices for me here where like I might miss like a band that I'd like playing another venue or something, but wow, like Adam circa 1998 would freaking die to be.
I see they didn't stack anybody against the Melvins, probably because they were scared.
Yeah, they're playing their own time there.
There's also a lot of mystery acoustic sets. I have no inside info, but I bet Buzz Osborne's going to do one of the Melvins because, I mean, he's been promoting his acoustic solo record this year. So, I mean, it's a perfect fitting, you know. This is cool, man. Kepi Gooley, Mikey Erg, Franz Nicolai, Chris Farren, Spoonboy, all on the same right in a row. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, you know, there was a show like that at Pooza the one year where they basically like had all the guys that were the frontmen of their various bands or guys that were solo performers come out and do their solo sets. And it was pretty rocking, too. It wasn't strictly like, you know, everyone doing their sad old country bastard solo things. It was people doing like, you know, doing their normal stuff. And it was a lineup a lot like that. And I know Vic Ruggiero from the Slackers, and I think Kepi Gooley was part of it. But yeah, so that would be really cool.
Here's one to hit if you're a fan of this. High Dive on Sunday. Shinobu into Hard Girls into Jeff Rosenstock. Those are all basically permutations of like the same like five or six guys. So they'll probably just flow into each other. That'll be cool to see if you're into that kind of thing. And then followed by the Smith Street Band. So I know Jeff Rosenstock's been hanging out with those guys. So that'll be a cool set if you're into that kind of stuff.
Yeah, these shows seem very... It shows a little bit of the maturity of Fest, I think. Like, a lot of these things seem like pretty solid shows. Like, I don't think that they're... It doesn't seem like there's so much expecting you to have to run from one place to another as much. So yeah, this is all looking pretty good. I wish I was there, but yeah,
I'm just going to say, if you don't go see the Melvins, you're doing it wrong.
You have no reason not to go see the Melvins too.
You don't.
Cause like, I mean, who are they up against?
Empire. I Was a Lonely Estate.
I don't even know who that is. So there you go. I mean, shit, you could go see Hot Water Music close off at Bo Diddley's and then hoof it down to the Woolly and catch the Melvins.
Or you can go see Shinobu in the Hard Girls and the Jeff Rosenstock and the Smith Street Band, then go kick it with the Melvins, baby. What a way to close out Fest.
Oh, God, I want to go so badly. This is...
Ricky, just go, man. I mean, you're only like 23, right? Just go.
Yeah, like just quit your job. You can start a new life when you get back because you're young, because you can recover from that.
It's just kind of that plane ticket from here to Florida. That's
if you start
real
hitching
pain
now.
Get there for next year.
Who can get there for Halloween?
Oh,
I assume
Ricky.
I don't give anyone like hitchhiking in California advice. Ricky's gonna end up in like a Tijuana jail or something. It's my fault. Adam said this was safe.
Eventually I'll make it. I mean, there's so many fests I want to go to. I want to go to this. I want to go to Punk Rock Bowling. And have fun, everyone.
Well, that's right. If you go to Fest, let us know about your let us know about your wild and wacky adventures. podcast@punknews.org. I guess that about wraps up this week's episode, doesn't it?
That's it.
All right. We'll see you next week, and hopefully Ricky will not be in a Tijuana jail calling me up asking for bail. We'll see you next week.